the nine who still live. In these millennia, none have ever died and returned to damnation, but it doesn't matter as it once did. The Oath Pact has been weakened almost to annihilation, and Odium has created his own storm. The few do not return to damnation when killed. They are reborn in the next Everstorm.
Storms? How could they defeat that? Dalinar looked again at that empty spot among the swords.
The madman, the herald. He came to Kolinar with a shard blade. Shouldn't that have been his honor blade?
Yes, but the one delivered to you is not it. I do not know what happened.
I need to speak with him. He was at the monastery when we marched, wasn't he?
Dalinar needed to ask the Ardens to see who had evacuated the madmen.
Is this what caused the Radiance to rebel?
Navani asked.
Are these secrets what sparked the Recreants?
No, that is a deeper secret, one I will not speak.
Why? Dalinar demanded.
Because were you to know it, you would abandon your oaths as the ancient Radiance did.
I wouldn't?
Wouldn't you?
The Stormfather demanded, his voice growing louder.
Would you swear it? Swear upon an unknown. These heralds swore they would hold back the Voidbringers, and what happened to them? There is not a man alive who has not broken an oath, Dalinar Kholin. Your new Radiants hold in their hands the souls and lives of my children. No, I will not let you do as your predecessors did. You know the important parts. The rest is irrelevant.
Dalinar drew in a deep breath, but contained his anger. In a way, the Stormfather was right. He couldn't know how this secret would affect him or his Radiance. He'd still rather know it. He felt as if he were walking about with a headsman following, planning to claim his life at any moment. He sighed as Navani stood and walked to him, taking his arm.
I'll need to try to do sketches from memory of each of those honor blades, or better, send Shallan to do it. Perhaps we can use the drawings to locate the others.
A shadow moved at the entrance to this little alcove, and a moment later a young man stumbled in. He was pale of skin, with strange wide shin eyes and brown hair that had a curl to it. He could have been one of any number of shin men Dalinar had seen in his own time. They were still ethnically distinct, despite the passing of millennia. The man fell to his knees before the wonder of the abandoned honor blades. But a moment later, the man looked to Dalinar and then spoke with the Almighty's voice.
Unite them.
Was there nothing you could do for the heralds? Dalinar asked. Was there nothing their god could do to prevent this?
The Almighty, of course, couldn't answer. He had died fighting this thing they faced, the force known as Odium. He had, in a way, given his own life to the same cause as the heralds. The vision faded.
Folio, the Vorin Hava. Though fashion elites in Leofor have presented more daring designs in past folios, they've found there is no quicker way to influence Alethian Vaden styles than through subtle changes over time in the traditional Vorin Hava.
39. Notes. No good can come of two shards settling in one location. It was agreed that we would not interfere with one another, and it disappoints me that so few of the shards have kept to this original agreement. Shallan can take notes for us, Yasna said. Shallan looked up from her notebook. She'd settled against the tile-covered wall, sitting on the floor in her blue hava, and had intended to spend the meeting doing sketches. It had been over a week since her recovery and subsequent meeting with Yasna at the Crystal Pillar. Shallan was feeling better and better, and at the same time less and less like herself. What a surreal experience it was, following Jasnah around as if nothing had changed. Today, Dalinar had called a meeting of his Radiance, and Jasnah had suggested the basement rooms of the tower because they were so well secured. She was incredibly worried about being spied upon. The rows of dust had been removed from the library floor. Navani's flock of scholars had carefully catalogued every splinter. The emptiness served only to underscore the absence of the information they'd hoped to find. Now everyone was looking at her. "Notes?" Shallan asked. She'd barely been following the conversation.
"We could call for brightness, Teshuv."
So far it was a small group. The Blackthorn, Navani, and their core surge binders, Jasnah, Renarin, Shallan, and Kaladin Stormblessed, the Flying Bridgeman. Adolin and Elokar were away, visiting Vaidenar to survey the military capacities of Taravangian's army. Malata was working the Oathgate for them.
"No need to call in another scribe," Jasnah said. "We covered shorthand in your training, Shallan. I'd see how well you've retained the skill. Be fastidious. We will need to report to my brother what we determine here."
The rest of them had settled into a group of chairs, except for Kaladin, who stood leaning against the wall, looming like a thundercloud. He had killed Helleran, her brother. The emotion of that peaked out, but Shallan smothered it, stuffing it into the back of her mind. Kaladin wasn't to be blamed for that. He'd just been defending his Bright Lord. She stood up, feeling like a chastened child. The weight of their stares prodded her to walk over and take a seat beside Jasnah, with her pad open and pencil ready.
"So," Kaladin said, "according to the Stormfather, not only is the Almighty dead, but he condemned 10 people to an eternity of torture. We call them heralds, and they're not only traitors to their oaths, they're probably also mad. We had one of them in our custody, likely the maddest of the lot, but we lost him in the turmoil of getting everyone to Urethiru. In short, everyone who might have been able to help us is crazy, dead, a traitor, or some combination of the three." He folded his arms. "Figures."
Jasnah glanced at Shallan. She sighed, then recorded a summary of what he'd said, even though it was already a summary.
"So what do we do with this knowledge?" Renarin said, leaning forward with his hands clasped.
"We must curb the Voidbringer assault," Jasnah said. "We can't let them secure too great a foothold."
"The Parshmen aren't our enemies," Kaladin said softly.
Shallan glanced at him. There was something about that wavy dark hair, that grim expression. Always serious, always solemn, and so tense, like he had to be strict with himself to contain his passion.
"Of course there are enemies," Jasnah said. "They're in the process of conquering the world. Even if your report indicates they aren't as immediately destructive as we feared, they are still an enormous threat."
"They just want to live better lives," Kaladin said.
"I can believe," Jasnah said, "that the common Parshmen have such a simple motive. But their leaders? They will pursue our extinction."
"Agreed," Navani said. "They were born out of a twisted thirst to destroy humankind."
"The Parshmen are the key," Jasnah said, shuffling through some pages of notes. "Looking over what you discovered, it seems that all Parshmen can bond with ordinary Spren as part of their natural life cycle. What we've been calling Voidbringers are instead a combination of a Parshmen with some kind of hostile Spren or spirit."
"The Fused,"
Dalinar said.
"Great," Kaladin said. "Fine. Let's fight them, then. Why do the common folk have to get crushed in the process?"
"Perhaps," Jasnah said, "you should visit my uncle's vision and see for yourself the consequences of a soft heart. First-hand witness of a desolation might change your perspective."
"I've seen war, Brightness. I'm a soldier. Problem is, ideals have expanded my focus. I can't help but see the common men among the enemy. They're not monsters.
Dalinar raised a hand to stop Yasna's reply.
Your concern does you credit, Captain, Dalinar said. And your reports have been exceptionally timely. Do you honestly see a chance for an accommodation here?
I don't know, sir. Even the common Parshmen are furious at what was done to them.
I can't afford to stay my hand from war, Dalinar said. Everything you say is right, but it is also nothing new. I have never gone to battle where some poor fools on either side, men who didn't want to be there in the first place, weren't going to bear the brunt of the pain.
Maybe, Kaladin said, that should make you reconsider those other wars, rather than using them to justify this one.
Shallan's breath caught. It didn't seem the sort of thing you said to the Blackthorn.
Would that it were so simple, Captain.
Dalinar sighed loudly, looking weathered to Shallan.
Let me say this. If we can be certain of one thing, it is the morality of defending our homeland. I don't ask you to go to war idly, but I will ask you to protect. Alethkar is besieged. The men doing it might be innocents, but they are controlled by those who are evil.
Kaladin nodded slowly.
The king has asked my help in opening the Oath Gate. I've agreed to give it to him.
Once we secure our homeland, Dalinar said, I promise to do something I'd never have contemplated before hearing your reports. I'll seek to negotiate. I'll see if there is some way out of this that doesn't involve smashing our armies together.
Negotiate? Yasna said. Uncle, these creatures are crafty, ancient, and angry. They spent millennia torturing the heralds just to return and seek our destruction.
We'll see, Dalinar said. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to contact anyone in the city with the visions. The Stormfather has found Kolinar to be a dark spot to him.
Navani nodded. That seems, unfortunately, to coordinate with the failure of the span reeds in the city. Captain Kaladin's report confirms what our last notes from the city said. The enemy is mobilizing for an assault on the capital. We can't know what the city's status will be once our strike force arrives. You might have to infiltrate an occupied city, Captain.
Please send that it isn't so, Renarin whispered, eyes down. How many would have died on those walls, fighting nightmares?
We need more information, Yasna said. Captain Kaladin, how many people can you take with you to Alethkar?
I plan to fly at the front of a storm, Kaladin said, like I did returning to Yirithiru. It's a bumpy ride, but maybe I can fly over the top of the winds. I need to test it. Anyway, I think I could bring a small group.
You won't need a large force, Dalinar said. You, a few of your best squires. I'd send Adolin with you too, so you have another shard bearer in an emergency. Six, perhaps. You, three of your men, the king, Adolin. Get past the enemy, sneak into the palace, and activate the Oath Gate.
Pardon if this is out of line, Kaladin said. But Elokar himself is the odd one. Why not just send me and Adolin? The king will probably slow us down.
The king needs to go, for personal reasons. Will there be a problem between you?
I'll do what is right, regardless of my feelings, sir. And I might be beyond those feelings anyway now.
This is too small, Yasna mumbled. Shallan started, then glanced at her. Too small?
Not ambitious enough, Yasna said more firmly. By the Stormfather's explanation, the Fused are immortal. Nothing stops their rebirth now that the Heralds have failed. This is our real problem. Our enemy has a near-endless supply of Parshmen bodies to inhabit, and judging by what the good Captain has confirmed through experience, These fused can access some kind of surge binding. How do we fight against that? Shallan looked up from her notepad, glancing toward the others in the room. Renarin still leaned forward, hands clasped, eyes on the floor. Navani and Dalinar were sharing a look. Kaladin continued to lean against the wall, arms folded, but he shifted his posture, uncomfortable.
"Well," Dalinar finally said, "we'll have to take this one goal at a time. First, Kolinar."
"Pardon, Uncle," Yasna said. "While I don't disagree with that first step, now is not the time to think only of the immediate future. If we are to avoid a desolation that breaks society, then we'll need to use the past as our guide and make a plan."
"She's right,"
Renarin whispered. "We're facing something that killed the Almighty himself. We fight terrors that break the minds of men and ruin their souls. We can't think small." He ran his hands through his hair, which was marked by less yellow than his brother's.
"Almighty, we have to think big. But can we take it all in without going mad ourselves?"
Dalinar took a deep breath.
"Yasna, you have a suggestion of where to start this plan?"
"Yes. The answer is obvious. We need to find the heralds." Kaladin nodded in agreement. "Then," Yasna added, "we need to kill them."
"What?" Kaladin demanded. "Woman, are you insane?"
"The Stormfather laid it out," Yasna said, unperturbed. "The heralds made a pact. When they died, their souls traveled to damnation and trapped the spirits of the Voidbringers, preventing them from returning."
"Yeah? Then the heralds were tortured until they broke."
"The Stormfather said their pact was weakened, but did not say it was destroyed," Yasna said. "I suggest that we at least see if one of them is willing to return to damnation. Perhaps they can still prevent the spirits of the enemy from being reborn. It's either that, or we completely exterminate the Parshmen so that the enemy has no hosts." She met Kaladin's eyes. "In the face of such an atrocity, I would consider the sacrifice of one or more heralds to be a small price."
"Storms!" Kaladin said, standing up straight. "Have you no sympathy?"
"I have plenty, Bridgeman. Fortunately, I temper it with logic. Perhaps you should consider acquiring some at a future date."
"Listen, Brightness," Kaladin began. "I—"
"Enough, Captain,"
Dalinar said. He gave Yasna a glance. Both fell quiet, Yasna without so much as a peep. Shallan had never seen her respond to someone with the respect she gave Dalinar.
"Yasna," Dalinar said, "even if the Pact of the Heralds still holds, we can't know that they'd stay in damnation, or the mechanics for locking away the Voidbringers there. That said, locating them seems like an excellent first step. They must know much that can greatly assist us. I will leave it to you, Yasna, to plan out how to accomplish that."
What of the Unmade?" Renarin said. "There will be others, like the creature we found down here."
"Navani has been researching them,"
Dalinar said. "We need to go even farther, Uncle," Yasna said. "We need to watch the movements of the Voidbringers. Our only hope is to defeat their armies so soundly that even if their leaders are constantly reborn, they lack the manpower to overwhelm us."
"Protecting Alethkar," Kaladin said, "doesn't have to mean completely crushing the Parshmen, and
if you wish, Captain," Yasna snapped, "I can get you some mink kits to cuddle while the adults plan. None of us want to talk about this, but that does not make it any less inevitable."
"I'd love that," Kaladin responded. "In turn, I'll get you some eels to cuddle. You'll feel right at home."
Yasna curiously smiled.
"Let me ask this, Captain. Do you think ignoring the movement of Voidbringer troops would be wise?"
"Probably not," he admitted.
"And do you think, perhaps, that you could train your Squire Windrunners to fly up high and scout for us? If span reads are proving unreliable these days, we'll need another method of watching the enemy. I'd happily cuddle sky eels, as you offer, if your team would be willing to spend some time imitating them. Kaladin looked to Dalinar, who nodded appreciatively.
Excellent, Yasna said. Uncle, your coalition of monarchs is a superb idea. We need to pen the enemy in and prevent them from overrunning all of Roshar. If...
She trailed off.
Shallan paused, looking at the doodle she'd been doing. Actually, it was a bit more complex than a doodle. It was kind of a full sketch of Kaladin's face, with passionate eyes and a determined expression. Yasna had noticed a creation spren in the form of a small gemstone that had appeared on the top of her page, and Shallan blushed, shooing it away.
Perhaps, Yasna said, glancing at Shallan's sketchbook. We could do with a short break, Uncle.
If you wish, he said. I could use something to drink.
They broke up, Dalinar and Navani chatting softly as they went to check with the guards and servants in the main hallway. Shallan watched them go with a sense of longing as she felt Yasna loom over her.
Let us chat, Yasna said, nodding toward the far end of the long rectangular room.
Shallan sighed, closed her notebook, and followed Yasna to the other end, near a pattern of tiles on the wall. This far from the spheres brought for the meeting, the lighting was dim.
May I? Yasna said, holding out her hand for Shallan's notebook.
She relinquished it. A fine depiction of the young captain, Yasna said. I see 3 lines of notes here, after you were pointedly instructed to take the minutes. We should have sent for a scribe. We had a scribe. To take notes is not a lowly task, Shallan. It is a service you can provide.
If it's not a lowly task, Shallan said, then perhaps you should have done it.
Yasna closed the sketchpad and fixed Shallan with a calm, level stare, the type that made Shallan squirm.
I remember, Yasna said, a nervous, desperate young woman, frantic to earn my goodwill.
Shallan didn't reply.
I understand, Yasna said, that you have enjoyed independence. What you accomplished here is remarkable, Shallan. You even seem to have earned my uncle's trust. A challenging task.
Then maybe we can just call the wardship finished, eh? Shallan said.
I mean, I'm a full radiant now.
Radiant, yes, Shallan said.
Full?
Where's your armor?
Armor?
Yasna sighed softly, opening up the sketchpad again.
Shallan, she said in a strangely comforting tone. I'm impressed. I am impressed, truly. But what I've heard of you recently is troubling. You've ingratiated yourself with my family and made good on the causal betrothal to Adolin. Yet here you are with wandering eyes. As this sketch testifies, you skip meetings that Dalinar calls, Yasna continued, soft but immovable. When you do go, you sit at the back and barely pay attention. He tells me that half the time you find an excuse to slip out early. You investigated the presence of an unmaid in the tower and frightened it off basically alone. Yet you never explained how you found it, when Dalinar's soldiers could not.
She met Shallan's eyes. You've always hidden things from me. Some of those secrets were very damaging, and I find myself unwilling to believe you don't have others.
Shallan bit her lip, but nodded.
That was an invitation, Yasna said, to talk to me.
Shallan nodded again.
She wasn't working with the Ghost Bloods. That was Vale. And Yasna didn't need to know about Vale.
Yasna couldn't know about Vale.
Very well, Yasna said with a sigh. Your wardship is not finished, and won't be until I'm convinced that you can meet minimum requirements of scholarship, such as taking shorthand notes during an important conference. Your path as a radiant is another matter. I don't know that I can guide you. Each order was distinctive in its approach. But as a young man will not be excused from his geography lessons simply because he has achieved competence with the sword, I will not release you from your duties to me simply because you have discovered your powers as a radiant. Yasna handed back the sketchpad and walked toward the ring of chairs. She settled next to Renarin, prodding him gently to speak with her. He looked up for the first time since the meeting had begun and nodded, saying something Shallan couldn't hear. Pattern said. She is wise. That's perhaps her most infuriating feature, Shallan said. Storms. She makes me feel like a child. Worst part is she's probably right, Shallan said. Around her, I do act more like a child. It's like part of me wants to let her take care of everything, and I hate, hate, hate that about myself. Is there a solution? I don't know. Perhaps. Act like an adult? Shallan put her hands to her face, groaning softly and rubbing her eyes with her fingers. She'd basically asked for that, hadn't she? Come on, she said. Let's go to the rest of the meeting. As much as I want an excuse to get out of here. Pattern said. Something about this room. What? Shallan asked. Something, Pattern said in his buzzing way. It has memories, Shallan. Memories? Did he mean in Shadesmar? She'd avoided traveling there. That was at least one thing in which she'd listened to Yasna. She made her way back to her seat, and after a moment's thought, slipped Yasna a quick note. Pattern says this room has memories. Worth investigating in Shadesmar? Yasna regarded the note, then wrote back. I found that we should not ignore the offhand comments of our Spren. Press him. I will investigate this place. Thank you for the suggestion. The meeting started again, and now turned to discussion of specific kingdoms around Roshar. Yasna was most keen on getting the Shin to join them. The Shattered Plains held the easternmost of the Oath Gates, and that was already under Alethi control. If they could gain access to the one farthest to the west, they could travel the breadth of Roshar, from the entry point of the High Storms to the entry point of the Everstorms, in a heartbeat. They didn't talk tactics too specifically. That was a masculine art, and Dalinar would want his high princes and generals to discuss the battlefields. Still, Shallan didn't fail to notice the tactical terms Yasna used now and then. In things like this, Shallan had difficulty understanding the woman. In some ways, Yasna seemed fiercely masculine. She studied whatever she pleased, and she talked tactics as easily as she talked poetry. She could be aggressive, even cold. Shallan had seen her straight up execute thieves who had tried to rob her. Beyond that, well, it probably was best not to speculate on things with no meaning, but people did talk. Yasna had turned down every suitor for her hand, including some very attractive and influential men. People wondered. Was she perhaps simply not interested? All of this should have resulted in a person who was decidedly unfeminine. Yet Yasna wore the finest makeup and wore it well, with shadowed eyes and bright red lips. She kept her safe hand covered, and preferred intricate and fetching styles of braids from her hairdresser. Her writings and her mind made her the very model of Vorin femininity. Next to Yasna, Shallan felt pale, stupid, and completely lacking in curves. What would it be like to be so confident, so beautiful yet so unconstrained all at once. Surely Yasna Kolin had far fewer problems in life than Shallan. At the very least, she created far fewer for herself than Shallan did. It was about this point that Shallan realized she'd missed a good 15 minutes of the meeting and had again lapsed in her note-taking. Blushing furiously, she huddled up on her chair and did her best to remain focused for the rest of the meeting. At the end, she presented a sheet of formal shorthand to Yasna. The woman looked it over, then cocked a perfectly shaped eyebrow at the line at the center where Shallan had grown distracted. "Dalinar said some stuff here," the line said. "It was very important and useful, so I'm sure you remember it without needing a reminder." Shallan smiled apologetically and shrugged. "Please write this out in longhand," Yasna said, handing it back. "Have a copy sent to my mother, and to my brother's head scribe." Shallan took it as a dismissal and rushed away. She felt like a student who had just been released from lessons, which angered her. At the same time, she wanted to run off and immediately do as Yasna had asked, to renew her mistress's faith in her, which angered her even more. She ran up the steps out of the tower's basement, using stormlight to prevent fatigue. The different sides within her clashed, snapping at each other. She imagined months spent under Yasna's watchful care, training to become a mousy scribe, as her father had always wanted. She remembered the days in Carbranth, when she'd been so uncertain, so timid. She couldn't return to that. She wouldn't. But what to do instead? When she finally reached her rooms, Pattern was buzzing at her. She tossed aside her sketch pad and satchel, digging out Vale's coat and hat. Vale would know what to do. However, pinned to the inside of Vale's coat was a sheet of paper. Shallan froze, then looked around the room, suddenly anxious. Hesitantly, she unpinned the sheet and unfolded it. The top read, "You have accomplished the task we set out for you. You have investigated the Unmade, and not only learned something of it, but also frightened it away. As promised, here is your reward. The following letter explains the truth about your deceased brother, Nan Helleran, acolyte of the Radiant Order of the Skybreakers." 40. Questions, Peaks, and Inferences. As for Uli Da, it was obvious from the outset that she was going to be a problem. Good riddance. "There are at least two major institutions on Roshar, other than ourselves, which presaged the return of the Voidbringers and the Desolations," the letter read. "You are familiar with the first of these, the men who call themselves the Sons of Honor. The old king of Alethkar, the Blackthorn's brother, Gavilar Kolin, was a driving force in their expansion. He brought Meridas Amaram into their fold. As you no doubt discovered upon infiltrating Amaram's mansion in the war camps, the Sons of Honor explicitly worked for the return of the Desolations. They believed that only the Voidbringers would cause the Heralds to show themselves, and they believed that a desolation would restore both the Knights Radiant and the classical strength of the Vorin Church. King Gavilar's efforts to rekindle the Desolations are likely the true reason he was assassinated, though there were many in the palace that night who had reason to see him dead. A second group who knew the Desolations might return are the Skybreakers, led by the ancient herald Nalan Ilin, often simply called Nail. The Skybreakers are the only order of Radiance that did not betray its oaths during the Recreants. They have maintained a continuous clandestine line from ancient days. Nail believed that men speaking the words of other orders would hasten the return of the Voidbringers. We do not know how this could possibly be true, but as a herald, Nail has access to knowledge and understanding beyond us. You should know that the heralds are no longer to be seen as allies to man. Those that are not completely insane have been broken. Nail himself is ruthless, without pity or mercy. He has spent the last 2 decades, perhaps much longer, dealing with anyone close to bonding a Spren. Sometimes he recruited these people, bonding them to High Spren and making them Skybreakers. Others he eliminated. If the person had already bonded a Spren, then Nail usually went in person to dispatch them. If not, he sent a minion. A minion, like your brother, Helleran. Your mother had intimate contact with the Skybreaker acolyte, and you know the result of that relationship. Your brother was recruited because Nail was impressed with him. Nail may also have learned, through means we do not understand, that a member of your house was close to bonding a Spren. If this is true, they came to believe that Helleran was the one they wanted. They recruited him with displays of great power and shards. Helleran had not yet proved himself worthy of a Spren bond. Nail is exacting with his recruits. Likely, Helleran was sent to kill Amaram as a test. Either that, or he took it upon himself as a way of proving his worthiness for knighthood. It is also possible that the Skybreakers knew someone in Amaram's army was close to bonding a Spren, but I believe it likelier that the attack on Amaram was simply a strike against the Sons of Honor. From our spying upon the Skybreakers, we have records showing the only member of Amaram's army to have bonded a Spren was long since eliminated. The Bridgeman was not, so far as we understand, known to them. If he had been, he would certainly have been killed during his months as a slave. It ended there. Shallan sat in her room, lit only by the faintest sphere. Helleran? A Skybreaker? And King Gavilar? Working with Amaram to bring back the Desolations? Pattern buzzed with concern on her skirts and moved up onto the page, reading the letter. She whispered the words again to herself to memorize them, for she knew she couldn't keep this letter. It was too dangerous.
"Secrets," Pattern said. "There are lies in this letter."
So many questions. Who else had been there on the night Gavilar had died, as the letter hinted? And what about this reference to another surge binder in Amaram's army? "He's dangling tidbits in front of me," Shallan said. "Like a man on the docks who has a trained curl that will dance and wave its arms for fish."
"But we want those tidbits, don't we?"
"That's why it works." "Storm it." She couldn't deal with this at the moment. She took a memory of the page. It wasn't a particularly efficient method in regards to text, but it would work in a pinch. Then she stuffed the letter in a basin of water and washed off the ink, before shredding it and wadding it into a ball. From there, she changed into her coat, trousers, and hat, and snuck from the rooms as Vale. Vale found Vatha and some of his men playing at pieces in their barracks' common room. Though this was for Sabariel's soldiers, she saw men in blue uniforms as well. Dalinar had ordered his men to spend time with the soldiers of his allies to help foster a sense of camaraderie. Vale's entrance drew glances, but not stares. Women were allowed in such common rooms, though few came. Little sounded less appealing to a woman being courted than, "Hey, let's go sit in the barracks' common room and watch men grunt and scratch themselves." She sauntered over to where Vatha and his men had set up at a round wooden table. Furniture was finally trickling down to the ordinary men. Shallan even had a bed now. Vale settled down in a seat and leaned back, tipping the chair so it clicked against the stone wall. This large common room reminded her of a wine cellar, dark, unadorned, and filled with a variety of unusual stenches. "Vale," Vatha said, nodding to her. 4 of them were playing at this table: Vatha, One-Eyed Gaz, Lanky Red, and Shob. The latter wore a glyph ward wrapped around one arm and sniffled periodically. Vale leaned her head back.
I seriously need something to drink.
I've got an extra mug or two on my ration, Red said cheerfully.
Vale eyed him to see if he was hitting on her again. He was smiling, but otherwise didn't seem to be making a pass.
Right kind of you, Red, Vale said, digging out a few chips and tossing them to him.
He tossed over his requisition chit, a little piece of metal with his number stamped on it. A short time later, she was back in her place, nursing some Lavis beer.
Tough day, Vatha said, lining up his pieces.
The small stone bricks were about the size of a thumb, and the men each had 10 of them that they arranged face down. The betting started soon after. Apparently Vatha was the mink for this round.
Yeah, she replied. Shallan's been an even bigger pain than usual.
The men grunted.
It's like she can't decide who she is, you know, Vale continued. One moment she's cracking jokes like she's sitting in a knitting circle with old ladies. The next she's staring at you with that hollow gaze. The one that makes you think her soul has gone vacant. She's a strange one, our mistress, Vatha agreed. Makes you want to do things, Gaz said with a grunt. Things you never thought you'd do.
Yeah,
Glurv said from the next table over.
I got a medal.
Me?
For helping find that mess hiding in the basement. Old Colin himself sent it down for me.
The overweight soldier shook his head, bemused, but he was wearing the medal, pinned right to his collar.
It was fun, Gaz admitted. Going out carousing, but feeling like we were doing something. That's what she promised us, you know? Making a difference again. The difference I want to make, Vatha said, is filling my pouch with your spheres, you men betting or not.
The four players all tossed in some spheres. Pieces was one of those games that the Vorin Church grudgingly allowed, as it involved no randomization. Dice, drawing from a deck of cards, even shuffling up the pieces. Betting on such things was like trying to guess the future. And that was so deeply wrong. Thinking of it made Vale's skin crawl. She wasn't even particularly religious. Not like Shallan was. People wouldn't play games like those in the official barracks. Here they played guessing games. Vatha had arranged 9 of his pieces in a triangle shape. The 10th one he set to the side and flipped over as the seed. It, like the hidden 9, was marked with the symbol of one of the Alethi princedoms. In this case, the seed was Aladar's symbol, in the form of a chul. The goal was to arrange your 10 pieces in a pattern identical to his, even though they were face down. You'd guess which were which through a series of questions, peeks, and inferences. You could force the mink to reveal pieces just to you or to everyone, based on certain other rules. In the end, someone called, and everyone flipped over their pieces. The one with the most matches to the mink's pattern was declared winner and claimed the pot. The mink got a percentage, based on certain factors, such as the number of turns it took before someone called.
What do you think?
Gaz asked, as he tossed a few chips into the bowl at the center, buying the right to peek at one of Vatha's tiles.
How long will Shallan go this time before she remembers we're here?
Long time, I hope, Shob said. I think I might be coming down with something.
So all is normal, Shob, Red said.
It's big this time,
Shob said.
I think I might be turning into a void bringer.
A void bringer, Vale said flatly.
Yeah. Look at this rash.
He pulled back the glyph word, exposing his upper arm, which looked perfectly normal. Vatha snorted.
Eh,
Shob said.
I'm likely to die, Sarge. You mark me. I'm likely to die.
He moved around a few of his tiles.
If I do, give my winnings to them orphans.
Them orphans? Red asked.
You know, Orphans.
Shab scratched his head.
There's orphans, right? Somewhere? Orphans that need food? Give them mine after I die.
Shab, Vatha said.
With the way justice plays out in this world, I can guarantee you'll outlive the rest of us.
Oh, that's nice, Shab said. Right nice, Sarge.
The game progressed only a few rounds before Shab started flipping over his tiles.
Already? Gaz said. Shab, you Kremling. Don't do it yet. I don't even have two lines.
Too late, Shab said.
Red and Gaz reluctantly started flipping their tiles.
Sadius,
Shallan said absently. Bethab, Ruthar, Rowian, Thanadol, Colin, Sabaril, Vama, Hatham, with Aladar as the seed. Vatha gaped at her, then flipped the tiles over, revealing them exactly as she'd said.
And you didn't even get any peeks. Storms, woman. Remind me never to play pieces with you.
My brothers always said the same thing, she said, as he split the pot with Shab, who had gotten them all right but three.
Another hand?
Gaz asked. Everyone looked at his bowl of spheres, which was almost empty.
I can get a loan, he said quickly. There's some fellows in Dalinar's guard who said, Gaz,
Vatha said.
But seriously, Gaz.
Gaz sighed.
Guess we can play for ends, then, he said.
And Shab eagerly got out some drops of glass shaped roughly like spheres, but without gemstones at the center. Fake money for gambling without stakes. Vale was enjoying her mug of beer more than she'd expected. It was refreshing to sit here with these men and not have to worry about all Shallan's problems. Couldn't that girl just relax? Let it all blow past her? Nearby, some washwomen entered, calling that laundry pickup would be in a few minutes. Vatha and his men didn't stir, though by Vale's estimation, the very clothing they were wearing could use a good scrub. Unfortunately, Vale couldn't completely ignore Shallan's problems. Moraes's note proved how useful he could be, but she had to be careful. He obviously wanted a mole among the Knights Radiant. I need to turn this around on him. Learn what he knows. He told her what the Skybreakers and the Sons of Honor had been up to. But what about Moraes and his cohorts? What was their objective? Storms. Did she dare try to double-cross him? Did she really have the experience or the training to attempt something like that?
Hey, Vale, Vatha said as they prepped for another game. What do you think? Has the brightness already forgotten about us again?
Vale shook herself out of her thoughts.
Maybe. She doesn't seem to know what to do with you lot. She's not the first, Red said.
He was the next mink, and carefully arranged his tiles in a specific order, face down.
I mean, it's not like we're real soldiers. Our crimes are forgiven,
Gaz said with a grunt, squinting his single eye at the seed tile that Red turned over.
But forgiven ain't forgotten. No military will take us on, and I don't blame them. I'm just glad those storming bridgemen haven't strung me up by my toes.
Bridgemen? Vale asked.
He's got a history with them, Vatha noted. I used to be their storming sergeant, Gaz said. Did everything I could to get them to run those bridges faster. Nobody likes their sergeant, though. I'm sure you were the perfect sergeant, Red said with a grin. I'll bet you really looked out for them, Gaz. Shut your creme hole,
Gaz grumbled.
Though I do wonder, if I'd been a little less hard on them, you think maybe I'd be out on that plateau right now, practicing like the lot of them do? Learning to fly? You think you could be a Knight Radiant, Gaz?
Vatha said, chuckling.
No. No, I guess I don't.
He eyed Vale.
Vale, you tell the brightness. We ain't good men.
good men, they'll find something useful to do with their time. We, on the other hand, might do the opposite.
The opposite? Zendid said from the next table over, where a few of the others continued to drink.
Opposite of useful? I think we're already there, Gaz, and we've been there forever.
Not me, Glurv said. I've got a medal.
I mean, Gaz said, we might get into trouble. I liked being useful. Reminded me of back when I first joined up. You tell her, Vale. Tell her to give us something to do other than gambling and drinking. Because, to be honest, I ain't very good at either one.
Vale nodded slowly. A washwoman idled by, messing with a sack of laundry. Vale tapped her finger on her cup. Then she stood and seized the washwoman by the dress and hauled her backward. The woman shouted, dropping her pile of clothing as she stumbled, nearly falling. Vale shoved her hand into the woman's hair, pushing away the wig of mottled brown and black. Underneath the woman's hair was pure alethy black, and she wore ashes on her cheeks, as if she'd been doing hard labor.
You, Vale said.
This was the woman from the tavern at All's Alley. What had her name been? Ishna? Several nearby soldiers had leapt up with alarmed expressions at the woman's outcry. Every one of those is a soldier from Dalinar's army, Vale noted, suppressing a roll of her eyes. Kolin troops did have a habit of assuming that nobody could take care of themselves.
Sit,
Vale said, pointing at the table. Red hastily pulled up another chair. Ishna settled herself, holding the wig to her chest. She blushed deeply, but maintained some measure of poise, meeting the eyes of Vatha and his men.
You are getting to be an annoyance, woman, Vale said, sitting.
Why do you assume I'm here because of you? Ishna said. You're jumping to conclusions.
You showed an unhealthy fascination with my associates. Now I find you in disguise, eavesdropping on my conversations.
Ishna raised her chin.
Maybe I'm just trying to prove myself to you. With the disguise I saw through the moment I glanced at you?
You didn't catch me last time, Ishna said.
Last time?
You talked about where to get horn-eater lager, Ishna said. Red insisted it was nasty. Gaz loves it.
Storms. How long have you been spying on me?
Not long, Ishna said quickly, in direct contradiction to what she'd just said. But I can assure you, promise it, that I'll be more valuable to you than these rancid buffoons. Please at least let me try.
Buffoons, Gaz said. Rancid, Shob said. Oh, that's just my boils, miss.
Walk with me, Vale said, standing up. She strode away from the table. Ishna scrambled to her feet and followed.
I wasn't really trying to spy on you, but how else was I quiet? Vale said.
She stopped at the doorway to the barracks, far enough from her men that they couldn't hear. She folded her arms, leaning against the wall by the door and looking back at them. Shallan had trouble with follow-through. She had good intentions and grand plans, but she got diverted too easily by new problems, new adventures. Fortunately, Vale could pick up a few of those loose threads. These men had proven that they were loyal, and they wanted to be useful. A woman could be given much less than that to work with.
The disguise was well done, she said to Ishna. Next time, rough up your free hand some more. The fingers gave you away. They aren't the fingers of a laborer.
Ishna blushed, balling her free hand into a fist.
Tell me what you can do and why I should care, Vale said. You have 2 minutes.
Ishna took a deep breath.
I was trained as a spy for House Hammeradin. In Vama's court? I know information gathering, message coding, observation techniques, and how to search a room without revealing what I've done.
So? If you're so useful, what happened?
Your people happened. The Ghostbloods. I'd heard of them. Whispered of by Bright Lady Hammeradin. She crossed them somehow and then...
she shrugged. She ended up dead, and everyone thought it might have been one of us who did it. I fled and ended up in the underground, working for a petty gang of thieves. But I could be so much more. Let me prove it to you. Vale crossed her arms. A spy? That could be useful. Truth was, Vale herself didn't have much actual training, only what Tin had showed her and what she'd learned on her own. If she was going to dance with the ghost bloods, she'd need to be better. Right now, she didn't even know what it was she didn't know. Could she get some of that from Ishna? Somehow get some training without revealing that Vale wasn't as skilled as she pretended to be? An idea began to take form. She didn't trust this woman, but then she didn't need to. And if her former Bright Lady really had been killed by the ghost bloods, perhaps there was a secret to learn there. I have some important infiltrations planned, Vale said. Missions where I need to gather information of a sensitive nature. I can help, Ishna said. What I really need is a support team so I don't have to go in alone. I can find people for you, experts. I wouldn't be able to trust them, Vale said, shaking her head. I need someone I know is loyal. Who? Vale pointed at Vatha and his men. Ishna's expression fell. You want to turn those men into spies? That, and I want you to prove to me what you can do by showing it to those men. And hopefully I can pick up something, too. Don't look so daunted. They don't need to be true spies. They just need to know enough about my work to support me and keep watch. Ishna raised her eyebrows skeptically, watching the men. Shab was obligingly picking his nose. That's a little like saying you want me to teach hogs to talk, with promises it will be easy as they only need to speak Alethi, not Vaden or Herdazian. This is the chance I'm offering, Ishna. Take it, or agree to stay away from me. Ishna sighed. All right, we'll see. Just don't blame me if the pigs don't end up talking.
41. On the ground, looking up. Regardless, this is not your concern. You turned your back on divinity. If race becomes an issue, he will be dealt with. And so will you. Teft woke up. Unfortunately, his first sensation was pain. Old, familiar pain. The throbbing behind his eyes, the raw biting needles of his burned fingers, the stiffness of a body that had outlived its usefulness. Kallek's breath. Had he ever been useful? He rolled over, groaning. No coat. Only a tight undershirt, soiled from lying on the ground. He was in an alleyway between tents and the breakaway market. The high ceiling vanished into the darkness. From just beyond the alleyway came the bright sounds of people chatting and haggling. Teft stumbled to his feet and was halfway through relieving himself against some empty boxes before he realized what he was doing. There were no high storms in here to wash the place out. Besides, he wasn't some drunkard who wallowed in filth and pissed in alleys, was he? That thought immediately reminded him of the deeper pain, a pain beyond the pounding in his head or the ache of his bones. The pain that was with him always, like a persistent ringing cutting deep to his core. This pain had awakened him. The pain of need. No, he wasn't just some drunkard. He was far, far worse. He stumbled out of the alleyway trying to smooth his hair and beard. Women he passed held safe hands to mouths and noses, looking away as if embarrassed for him. Perhaps it was a good thing he'd lost his coat. Storms help him if anyone recognized who he was. He'd shame the entire crew.
You're already ashamed of the crew, Teft, and you know it, he thought. You're a godless waste of spit.
He eventually found his way to the well, where he slouched in a line behind some others. Once at the water, he fell down on his knees, then used a trembling hand to fish out a drink with his tin cup. Once he tasted the cool water, his stomach immediately cramped, rejecting it even though he was parched, This always happened after a night on the moss, so he knew to ride the nausea and the cramps, hoping he could keep the water down. He slumped, holding his stomach, frightening the people in line behind him. Out in the crowd, there was always at least a small crowd near the well, some men in uniforms shoved through. Forest Green, Satius's men. They ignored the lines, then filled their buckets. When a man in Colin Blue objected, Satius's soldiers got right up in his face. The Colin soldier finally backed down. Good lad. They didn't need another brawl starting between Satius's men and other soldiers. Teft dipped his cup again, the pain from his previous sip fading. This well seemed deep, rippling water on top and a deep blackness below. He almost threw himself in. If he woke up in damnation tomorrow, would he still feel that itching need inside? That would be a fitting torment. Voidbringers wouldn't even have to flay his soul. All they'd need to do was tell him he'd never feel sated again, and then they could watch him squirm. Reflected in the waters of the well, a face appeared over his shoulder. A woman with pale white skin, glowing faintly, and hair that hovered around her head like clouds. "You leave me alone," he said, slapping his hand into the water. You just go find someone who cares." He stumbled back to his feet, finally getting out of the way so someone else could take a spot. Storms, what hour was it? Those women with buckets were ready to draw water for the day. The drunken nighttime crowds had been replaced by the enterprising and industrious. He'd been out all night, again. Kalek. Returning to the barracks would be the smart thing to do. But could he face them like this? He wandered through the market instead, eyes down. "I'm getting worse," a piece of him realized. The first month in Dalinar's employ, he'd been able to resist for the most part. But he'd had money again after so long as a bridgeman. Having money was dangerous. He'd functioned, only mossing an evening here, an evening there. But then Kaladin had left, and this tower, where everything had felt so wrong. Those monsters of darkness, including one that had looked just like Teft. He'd needed the moss to deal with that. Who wouldn't? He sighed. When he looked up, he found that Spren standing in front of him.
"Teft," she whispered. "You've spoken oaths."
Foolish, stupid oaths, spoken when he'd hoped that being radiant would remove the cravings. He turned away from her and found his way to a tent nestled among the taverns. Those were closed for the morning, but this place, it had no name and didn't need one, was open. It was always open, just like the ones back in Dalinar's war camp had been, just like the ones in Satius's war camp. They were harder to find in some places than others, but they were always there. Nameless, but still known. The tough-looking Herdazian man sitting at the front waved him in. It was dim inside, but Teft found his way to a table and slumped down. A woman in tight clothing and a glove with no fingers brought him a little bowl of fire moss. They didn't ask for payment. They all knew that he wouldn't have any spears on him today. Not after his binge last night. But they would make sure to get paid eventually. Teft stared at the little bowl, loathing himself. And yet the scent of it made his longing multiply tenfold. He let out a whimpering groan, then seized the fire moss and ground it between his thumb and forefinger. The moss let off a small plume of smoke, and in the dim light the center of the moss glowed like an ember. It hurt, of course. He'd worn through his calluses last night, and now rubbed the moss with raw, blistering fingers. But this was a sharp, present pain, a good kind of pain. Merely physical, it was a sign of life. It took a minute before he felt the effects, a washing away of his pains followed by a strengthening of his resolve. He could remember long ago that the fire moss had done more to him. He remembered euphoria. Nights spent in a dizzy, wonderful daze, where everything around him seemed to make sense. These days he needed the moss to feel normal, Like a man scrambling up wet rocks, he could barely reach where everyone else was standing before he slowly started sliding back down. It wasn't euphoria he craved anymore. It was the mere capacity to keep on going. The moss washed away his burdens. Memories of that dark version of himself. Memories of turning his family in as heretics, even though they'd been right all along. He was a wretch and a coward and didn't deserve to wear the symbol of Bridge Four. He'd as good as betrayed that Spren already. She'd best have fled. For a moment, he could give that all up to the fire moss. Unfortunately, there was something broken in Teft. Long ago, he'd gone to the moss at the urgings of other men in his squad in Sadeus's army. They could rub the stuff and get some benefit, like a man chewed ridge bark when on guard duty to stay awake. A little fire moss, a little relaxation, and then they moved on with their lives. Teft didn't work that way. Burdens shoved aside, he could have gotten up and gone back to the bridgeman. He could have started his day. But storms, a few more minutes sounded so nice. He kept going. He went through three bowls before a garish light made him blink. He pulled his face off the table where, to his shame, he drooled a puddle. How long had it been? And what was that terrible, awful light? "Here he is," Kaladin's voice said as Teft blinked. A figure knelt beside the table. "Oh, Teft.
He owes us for three bowls," said the den's keeper. "One garnet brome."
"Be glad," an accented voice growled. "We do not rip off pieces of your body and pay you with those."
Storms. Rock was here too? Teft groaned, turning away.
"Don't see me," he croaked. "Don't. Our establishment is perfectly legal, Horn Eater," the den keeper said. "If you assault us, be assured we will bring the guard, and they will defend us."
"Here's your blood money, you eel," Kaladin said, pushing the light toward them. "Rock, can you get him?" Large hands took Teft, surprisingly gentle with their touch. He was crying. "Kalek."
"Where's your coat, Teft?" Kaladin asked from the darkness. "I sold it,"